So welcome to this class. You do have a handout in front of you. And we're going to spend a little time looking at some things before we actually dig into our handout. There's a few folks here that, to begin with, I thought these are maybe a good way to get started a little bit. And I'll read over something. Watercolor is probably the most satisfying of all mediums. Although difficult in the beginning, after practice, its mysteries will unfold, providing the utmost pleasure for the dedicated. You may not agree with all of these things, but they're interesting. In watercolor, the experienced know that seeing chaos is usually the precursor to a strong painting. After 1,000 watercolors, you will find you have fallen in love with the paper and paint. Translucence is an effect unique to the medium of watercolor and the lure that beckons me into the studio for yet another creative adventure. If it is light, leave it white. Because watercolor actually moves on the paper, it is the most active of all mediums, almost a performance art. With large brushes and plenty of water, I approach the paper in a slam bang initial washes and end with the caress of a butterfly. In watercolor, playing around on a scrap piece of paper or the reverse side of a disaster invariably produces something interesting and unenjoyable. Let's think about that a little bit. So, maybe too often in our painting, we get so serious about it. It's like, oh, I'm going to do such a nice job. Of course, if you begin to play a little bit, you might end up with something that's quite interesting and maybe nicer than if you were trying to be real painstaking about it. And then watercolors is the first and the last thing an artist does. I think what he's trying to say is the very young can paint with watercolor and the master can paint with watercolor. And then he says, watercolor is a lifetime pursuit, mostly uphill. I'm just starting up that hill. I haven't gotten very far up the hill. Watercolor I think it'd be correct to say you probably paint all your life and still feel like, there's more. But at least that's how I feel. So I've done some watercolors over the years, but I feel like there's so much more to learn and just sort of scratching the surface. But this is a beginning watercolor class, so maybe you can get your brush wet and then go on from here. All right, we're going to try to look at a few things as we go through this this workshop now. Now, one thing I want to say, one thing I was going to say, yesterday when we were in here, we had everybody in the other direction. And I didn't think it was going to work very good. I thought it was going to be better before you have a little elbow room. So as we go through this, I don't know if some of you just, I know it's terribly tight, but if you want to spin around while we go through this workshop, through the slides, and then work after that. So the idea here is that watercolor can provide enjoyment and challenge at every age and every skill level. So, you know, maybe you started off like that, but then maybe you'll move on to something bigger and greater, or maybe, I don't know, any of us in this room will get to there or not. Maybe some of you have already. Watercolors can be very simple or quite complex. This is by Stan Miller. I don't know if that's the name anybody's familiar with, but he's... I don't know, has anybody arrived at that level or not? Watercolors can be bold or very muted. You can have lots of detail or very little detail. And, you know, that's a powerful painting, even though there's not a lot of detail there. Watercolor paintings can be photorealistic. Is that a photo or is it a painting? I'm pretty sure it's a painting. It almost looks like photography. Or they can be very loose and impressionistic. And I don't know about you, but I think in the past, many times I've looked at sort of impressionistic watercolor and thought, not interested. But people take a picture like this. It's very loose, but that is not the work of a child. There's tremendous skill to be able to do something like these types of watercolor paintings. I think this is by a guy named Gary Tucker. If you ever, I don't know how many of you all here, I'm just going to say now, I don't know how many of you all here use the internet, you know, watch stuff online as far as paintings. There's a tremendous wealth of information out there if you watch YouTube videos and stuff. And I'm not pushing that, okay? Some of the churches vary in what they allow and those kinds of things. But there are lots and lots of books on watercolor. But anyway, this guy, Gary Tucker, I'm pretty sure that's his name. He has different videos in. He's more loose, but he has a tremendous command of light and shade. Again, a little looser, but very beautiful painting. So, watercolor paintings can be used for portraiture. I love that one. That's, again, Stan Miller there. Or it can be used for landscapes. And this is a little bit more stylized. Just look at the, again, it's rough, but look at the dry brush effects in that tree. And just the way that comes together is just lovely. And then, of course, this is more realistic, again, landscapes. Or watercolor can be wonderful for still life paintings as well. And some of the projector here and so forth doesn't do justice to all of this. Now, let's see, we're moving into something else. Okay. I say here that often paintings that look complex are made of basic parts and techniques that are actually quite simple to do. And watercolor has a lot to do with laying down transparent washes and then building up from the lighter to the darker. And the white of the paper is typically unpainted paper. So you see this lovely white area? That's not white paint, that is the paper. And the reason that it looks so white is because of the dark and the shadow areas. And that picture just looks like it glows, basically. And it has to do with the transparent nature of watercolor. Now, it's true that some artists use white paint, but I'm quite sure that that wasn't the case here. Okay, let's move into supplies, paint, and this is from Wikipedia. Well, watercolor is a painting method in which the paints are made of pigments suspended in a water-based solution. Watercolors are usually translucent and appear luminous because the pigments are laid down in a pure form with few fillers obscuring the pigment colors. Watercolor paint comes in tubes or in cakes called pans. It isn't necessary to have a large variety of colors since you can mix your own basic colors. You don't need to purchase large tubes of paint to get started. In other words, so I don't know where you are in this whole thing, but you can get by with real tiny little tubes of paint typically because you don't use much paint, partly because you're just spreading it out in real thin washes, and also because your paint, you can just let it dry. Like you see this little palette you have, you're going to have dry paint. Well, you just make it wet, and away you go. And like I said, some paint can be purchased in cakes or in pans it's dry when you buy it. So you don't need a lot of paint. And I'm saying here that, especially in light of that, it's probably going to be better for you to go ahead and buy artist-grade paint rather than student-grade paint, at least if you're serious about it. Okay. Daniel Smith, I'm really not familiar with this line, but evidently it's a very good quality watercolor. And I know this one place I was looking, you really recommend Daniel Smith. But you see here, and you can't see it, but you have all these different colors, and then there's information about the color underneath. And I'm going to see if we still can't see it real well. Now, these are the colors that are on your little palette today. They're not Daniel Smith, by the way. But anyway, you have yellow, handsome yellow, raw sienna. It's not quite the same, maybe. Burnt sienna, Hooker's green, thylo blue, and ultramarine blue. Those are the colors we'll be working with today. You don't have a full palette of colors, okay? You're going to want to go buy some more. But anyway, here there's some information, and this is so far away I can barely see. But the idea is, every information is it shows you how transparent the color is. Like this where the circle is half blocked out. Well, see, that's saying that up here it gives you some information. Again, I think that's showing that this is semi-transparent, okay? And then the solid would be opaque, and the open circle would be transparent. And so, and then another thing is the staining qualities, whether the paint is staining or not. Some paint, when you put it down, will tend to stain your paper more, and it's harder to lift it back. And others tend to lay more on the surface, and they don't soak in as much. So it's not critical that you know this stuff, but it's kind of interesting, and the deeper you go into it, to kind of know of the different characteristics of your paint. This is an exercise, and I really need to get finished with it, but the idea here is to know your paints, to make little swatches and to see how it works, and this didn't show up very good, but to see how it works when you go from solid to nothing. And this particular man was talking about the benefit of that, and the idea of this black line is it helps to sort of show you how opaque the color is when it comes across the black line. And then also what he was doing was trying to lift, not to get that done, but lifting out the color with a Q-tip to show how much staining characteristic the thing has. Okay, let's go on. Let's talk about, the next one I have here is on brushes. I don't really have any slide on that, but brushes, you can buy really, really expensive brushes. But I find it interesting that these brushes that I purchased, I was surprised how good they were for as cheap as they were. So, yeah, there are, how should I say this? I mean, there's a lot of different quality levels, but you don't want stuff that's just junk either, and the quality does count. But like, for instance, you don't really need to buy those Kolinsky brushes that have natural bodies, the synthetic, or maybe a synthetic mix, work pretty well. Okay, let's move on. The type of paper, what you're going to be doing here today on the front here, we're going to be practicing on some paper that is, I think this is Strathmore 400, and it's not the highest quality. And then later in the day, we're going to be doing our painting on a good quality paper. We'll get to that later, but the Strathmore 400, I think, has some wood pulp probably in the paper, whereas like the Arches, you see here it says 100% rag, and that is going to be more of a cotton paper. I don't know all the details, but you're dealing more with a cotton paper. And in a general way, you don't really go wrong with purchasing Arches. It's definitely more expensive than some other paper, and there are other very good papers as well. Okay, watercolor paper. We typically use the 140 pound. It has the advantage of being thin enough to see through if you're tracing. It will buckle some. If you get the 300 pound paper, that's really stiff. But of course, it's more expensive, and you're probably not going to be able to trace through it. Some artists do a lot with stretching their paper. They'll soak the paper, and then they'll put it on a board and either staple it or somehow tape it down. And then when it's dry, it won't buckle much. For my work here, I'm doing illustration for books that are going to be, the illustration of the paint is going to be scanned in, and so if it has a little ripple, it's not a huge deal. If you were painting things that you wanted to put on the wall and you wanted perfectly flat, that would be different. You might want to figure out a little bit more about the stretching. Unless you use like a 300 pound, then it won't buckle much. So I usually just take my paper down to my board. That's what we're going to be doing today. So watercolor paper comes in three finishes. Hot press is smooth. Cold press has a medium texture, and rough has the most texture. This here, I think, would be considered a cold press, but it doesn't have much texture at all. Now, each of you should have a little piece of paper like this. That's just a little thing for you to play on. That is Arch's cold press. That's the paper we're going to be using later. And you can see it has a bit of a texture to it. And then the rough would even be, have more texture. Okay, your palette I guess there's, you can think of the palette as being the colors, the paint that you have, and also that the container or whatever that you're working in. I don't know if you're going to enjoy this little thing or not. This is probably not what you're going to want to do your main painting in if you, you know, pursue watercolor painting. It's too small. There's not hardly room there to do it justice. But this would be great for travel. You know, you could put your colors in there, snap it shut, and away you go. And if you get the urge to paint. So hopefully you will enjoy that little plastic palette. However, there are a lot of plastic palettes available. I know I was reading this one lady, and she really recommended like porcelain. She felt like that porcelain, ceramic, I don't know, whatever, something more like that. She felt like the water didn't bead up so much as it did on plastic, but it stayed more buttery. So, you know, you can experiment. But it is good to have something white because your paper's white, and that way you can adjust your color better. Now let's move into a few techniques and things. A wash, okay? Just a wash. Well, what's a wash? I mean, or why is it important to do a wash? I mean, just a flat area of color. Well, there are a lot of paintings that where it's good to be able to do a nice, even wash. There's a couple ways of doing this, and we're going to do it here later, but anyway, one way to do a wash is to make the whole area wet. And then, another thing you ought to do is when you're making a wash is to mix up your paint probably first. And mix enough. And we're going to have a little trouble with that because of the fact that our palette is so small. But, okay. You don't have a lot of water either. But that's okay. We'll tell you what we're going to do is if your water gets too muddy and dirty, we'll come around and we'll have a helper or somebody to get you fresh. But that's okay. You've got plenty of water for what we're doing. But the idea is you're going to want to take your brush and dip into the water and get some water out on your palette. Some people actually use like an eyedropper or something or some type of dropper, which we don't have. But get a bunch of water into your area and then mix your paint. So try to get enough water that you're not going to run out. Because the idea is if you run out and try to have to go back and mix color, well, then you're not going to be able to get a nice, even wash. So there's a couple ways of doing it. One is to make the whole area wet, and then just after you have your paint, just go back and forth. And you tilt your thing a little bit, and it'll just kind of melt together, and you can get a nice, even wash. The other way is to just leave it dry, and again, have enough paint, and you go back and forth, but make sure that you don't let it dry out. Like, try to keep a bead of water at the bottom as you go, and just keep going, and don't let it dry out. And like I said, have enough paint that you can cover it all. So it kind of depends whether you want to make it wet first, or just leave it dry and go down across. While we're talking about washes, so this is more what you call a graded wash. Yeah, a graded wash, where you start dark at the top and then move into lighter at the bottom. And there's a couple ways you can do that. One is, if this is wet, first of all, okay, if this is wet, and you dip in paint, and especially if it's not a very big area, and you start at the top, it's going to be stronger, and your paint is going to run out as far as you go down through here. This is still wet, okay? Stronger up here, you run out of paint, and so it kind of get a gradated wash or a graded wash. Probably a better way, I think, would be to start off, and then as you go, you're dipping your paint into your clear water, and you keep going back and forth, and so you're adding water as you go, and that way you get more of the graded wash. Now, this doesn't look good, but here your idea is this is like a variegated wash where, and you can do this with any color, but we're doing a yellow at the bottom, then doing a graded wash down to the yellow, and it doesn't show up, but you actually can bring the blue across the yellow, kind of melt them together, and that could be, for instance, the background for a landscape, and then you could put your, where they meet, could be more or less your horizon line, you could put through there, okay? So doing variegated washes can be good as well. Now then we have mixing colors. The primary colors, yellow, red, and blue, those you can mix anymore. But having additional colors is nice and helpful. I really don't paint with the basic colors. I use a lot more. A lot of mixing will be done on the palette, but very interesting and beautiful things can be achieved by letting colors mix on the paper using wet on wet techniques. In other words, rather than just simply mixing everything up, getting the right shade, and then putting it on, it's more creative, maybe a little more playful, if you actually throw colors in and let them kind of do their thing. And it depends what style of paint you're trying to do. Now let's talk about toning or darkening colors. Okay, with watercolor, you build it up in glazes, or you build it up from one layer to the next. So take, for instance, a blue. You can put down a layer of blue, and then you say, well, that's not dark enough for the shadows. I'm just going to put more blue on. Well, yes, you can get it darker that way. But if you want to actually, of course, there's going to be some limits, especially if you're working with a yellow or something light. If you want to actually tone it or darken it, you may want to mix an analogous color, a color that's next to it, a similar color but next to it on the color wheel, and add a cooler one rather than a warmer. For instance, if you're trying to tone down a red, you might add some purple, which is a little cooler, and rather than the other side, which would be orange. Or you can mix a complementary color. Now, which a complementary color would be one straight across. For instance, the complement of green is red, and so a bit of green mixed with your red can really change the color of your red. Now I'd like to spend just a little bit of time thinking about your colors that you have here in your palette. And as you go, as you work, let's just talk about this a little bit. Okay, so what you have up here at the top is going to be ultramarine blue. That's kind of a bit of a purplish blue. And this is the phthalo blue down here, which is a little bit more of a greener blue. And here you have Hooker's green, and I think this is Hansen yellow, and raw sienna, and burnt sienna. So in the picture we're going to be doing, we're going to be working, well actually, let's just jump right in. And let's see, what's on here? Yeah, this is the picture we're going to be painting later on. Okay. And if you, I don't know if you see this, if you think that looks complicated or not, but this is a painting that you can paint in many different ways, and it still looks good, or it could be looked quite good. Okay. What I want to do now is just think a little bit about how are we going to mix colors to make it come out. So, first thing I might say is this sky looks really complicated, and it is. I don't think you expect you to try to necessarily duplicate that. You could do a sky, let's say dark to light, with no clouds, and it still looks good. Okay? So you don't have to fret over that. But let's assume for a minute that you were going to use the ultramarine blue up here in the sky, but you did want to put some clouds in or something. What, using these few colors here, what could you mix with your blue to, say, tone it or get some different colors going? Okay, let's not take too much time here. Anybody?
Yellow.
Okay, you can mix some yellow in. Anything else?
Green.
What was it?
Green.
Green, you could. Especially, you might want to take some of the phthalo blue down here and mix it with the ultramarine. That's going to give it a little more of a greenish color. You might want to do that. Well, you might even want to take some of your the burnt sienna. Maybe not much, but maybe a little bit. That's going to tone it down. Let's keep moving. The mountains and the water, you're probably going to want to use the phthalo blue, but you can mix some ultramarine in, depending. But with those, you probably would want to mix, the mountains and the water, the phthalo blue. Of course, you can see here as you get closer to the shore, there's some brown actually showing through from the from the bank. Whether how much you show that is up to you. When you get to this tree back here, you're going to probably want to use the Hooker's Green, but there you might want to mix in some yellow. But now, especially I'm talking about this back tree now, the pine. So you might want to do Hooker's Green. What else? Some brown, yeah, the burnt sienna, that's going to darken it down, tone it down. You might want to put in some of your phthalate. So that's kind of the idea here. You want to mix things together. It's going to probably look better than if you just, use straight color. Okay, so mixing color. Now let's move on. Okay. Okay, this was, I'm not sure why I had that. Usually, I guess I'm never going to do it. Okay, you might say, ugly, ugly. Well, maybe. But this is, this is a wet on wet thing where you're just taking color and dropping it in. And hey, And so, I would encourage you to just do some playing like that. Just mess around. And you might be surprised what shows up. This is just like taking, making your paper wet and then dropping blobs of blue on there and then taking some other color and dropping in. And when you do that, that's called charging, because what happens is your color will tend to push the other away. And this is very, very crude, but there, and this you can't see it very well, but this is more like, and many times you don't want these things. These are called blooms. You may not want that in your painting, but it can make some really pretty effects. This doesn't show up very well, like it's really real life. And so this is a bit of the same idea, but you're getting these, I don't know what to call it, but this is what you call back runs. And I think kind of the idea is what happens is if some of your area is wetter, and then it tends to lead back into the area that's drier, you can get some of these backgrounds. Well, you may not want this in most of your paintings, but it can really be, I think, has some really neat effects. But anyway, salt, I don't know how many of you experimented with salt, but this is evidently a salt effect. If your grains are different sizes, you can get interesting effects. Here's an interesting thing where it looks like they put a little salt along some of these areas, not like the whole thing. And here, I think this is probably salt too, more of a a snowy scene. Okay, let's go back now to glazing. We're kind of almost back to where we were talking about. This doesn't show up well, but this is an exercise that you could do sometime, and that is to take your colors and to just load up your brush and try to take one continuous swipe across, okay, with these different colors, and then after that is completely dry, to do it the other way. Okay, so here you have a yellow, and then here you have it this way. And this is what you call glazing, and it doesn't show up well here, but it's interesting how the colors will show through. And that's another way of mixing colors, is to layer one color over another, but you need to be sure that is dry, because if you don't, like here, it looks like, you see what's happening there? I'm not sure what I did, but see, that's kind of bleeding out. And you can get mud if you try to layer off. That's one thing about water. Sometimes it takes patience. You want that thing to dry. And if you go putting water over an area that's not dry, it can just kind of mix together and get mud. And so I'm saying here, wet on dry, it's important that your paper be dry if you want to draw crisp details, otherwise the paint will tend to flow where there's moisture and the paint will bleed. When we get to working on this picture, if our sky is wet and you try to draw in these mountains and that's wet, you're not going to get a crisp day. It's going to bleed up in there. So that's one thing you have to be a little careful about when we go to the painting. Okay, dry brush effects. They're good for texture. So here you can see you have dry brush effects there on the tree, letting the white show through. This works better if the paper is a bit rough. Probably the rougher the better, because the paint is just sitting on the hot spots.
this is another standard order, but you see how you use a little dry brush effect over here or over here? It just kind of gives a nice effect. You can't see it real well, but I think there's some dry brush effects going on. And that's, this projector does not do justice to that name. This is granulation. I don't know how much you've seen granulation. Some paints granulate a lot more than others. And I don't know if you noticed it, but there was some of that with the ultramarine that we had looked at earlier. I'm not really ready for that. I don't know much about this, but I think there's a way that you can get something that will actually cause your paints to granulate also. So a lot of times you wouldn't want this, but for some things it's really neat. Okay, let's talk about, on your paper, it says here, I want to talk a little bit more about dry brush. One thing about dry brush, you might think, well, I need to have my brush be really dry before it'll work. Well, if you have a brush that's bigger like this, which we don't here today, but you can make this pretty wet, and if your brush will kind of bend itself, and if you can paint with the roots of the brush and stroke that across the paper, you're actually painting back here, or like on a flat brush, if you can kind of paint on the roots, you can get a dry brush effect even if there's a fair bit of water in it. Again, it's a kind of an experimental thing, but if you let most of the paint out, that helps too. But being able to paint like this instead of like this, you may help you to get a dry brush effect more. I don't know what others would say, but I tend to think that probably a lot of times it's better to do a dry brush effect on things that are closer to you rather than just anywhere in the painting doing dry brush. And maybe I'm not thinking right, but like on a picture like this, I think it's going to work better to do some dry brush effect on the foreground than, say, doing dry brush in the sky, for instance, or on the mountain. You could, but think about a little bit in the whole concept of texture. You don't want a lot of texture in an oil painting on distant things if you're not going to have it in the foreground. At least that's my opinion. Okay, let's move on. Blending, going from light to dark and from one color to another. Watercolors have a tendency to leave hard edges when they dry unless you smooth out and blend the edge. Wet on wet is one way of blending colors, but it can be a bit unpredictable. Wet on dry, you can smooth out the edge with a clean brush. Often use two brushes, one for applying paint, one for blending. So, if I'm painting away, I oftentimes will have two brushes, and maybe one in my mouth or wherever. And one is just wet, okay? So then when you put paint down, and let's say you want to blend that into what's already there, well, rather than having to dip, this has the right color paint, right? Rather than have to dip that into the water to make it wet. So if you just have this one wet, and you can just feather that edge, and you just feather it in instead of... So that's one tip that I think Alex taught me, and it has been a big help. Very small, minor thing, but it can be helpful. Okay, maintaining and creating white edges. Don't forget to leave white highlights in your paper or on your landscape. In this particular project we're doing today, I'm not sure how much white, pure white you're going to have. That's going to be up to you. But remember that the white is your paper. And that's one characteristic of watercolor. A lot of times you'll see little spots of white, and that's not all bad. Like, it can help to make the sparkle. Of course, you can a lot of times just paint around an area, but how's it going to work if you want this nice, flat, beautiful wash behind, but then you have things you want to be white in the foreground? Well, masking fluid can be helpful. Masking fluid comes in, like in containers where you can dip your brush or some kind of applicator in and make marks on your paper. And basically what it is, it's sort of like, well, I think people use this kind of brush in that, but it kind of acts like a brush in that. So you put it on, let it dry, then you just paint right over top, and then once the paint's dry, you can rub it off, and there's your white. This little applicator I like, this is really fine, a fine, very, very fine tip that you can squeeze little fine lines on like for grass or something in the foreground, and then works kind of the same way. One thing you can be really careful about is don't use a good brush with massive glitter. It can kind of mess up your brush, especially if you don't get it cleaned up right away. So masking fluid is nice, but it does have, I think, sometimes disadvantages because, let me say this way. Okay, you make a bunch of stuff white. Well, you're still going to probably want to go back in and paint those areas with another color or kind of blend them in. Again, it's going to depend a lot on your picture. I also mentioned here about a wax resist. I've never done that, so I've never done that works. Paint can also be lifted off with a clean, damp brush. Works better if the paint is still wet, but to a certain extent, if you don't even have the paint is dry, how much paint will come off depends on your paper and whether the paint was staining or non-staining. So you can have a totally dry painting, and you can take a wet brush in there and make it wet, and then take a Kleenex or something and lift off a good bit of color. There can be a pros and cons of that. Watercolor paper, good watercolor paper will stand a certain amount of abuse. Like that type of thing. Sometimes you can even take a stiff brush, like say an oil brush, and make the paper wet and just really scrub and lift off a bunch of colors. It's not the most ideal thing to do. You might make a bad spot, it might be hard to paint over it, but some of those things can work for helping with mistakes. Or you can use a razor blade or things like that, but you don't want to do that very extensively. And you can use white paint, white gouache, there's people who do. Scumbling basically has the idea of kind of, stippling effect with your brush, avoiding mud. Paints that have a lot of different pigments might tend to be more, when you mix them together, could maybe create more mud. I'm not really into that too much, but I've already talked about this damp layer thing. Avoid overworking. Overworking is a curse when it comes to watercolor. And for some of us, we have to fight against that thing. But sometimes it's better go to another part of the picture and come back or whatever. Or just leave it. It's maybe fine. Okay? And so what can happen is you can keep working there and you can mess up the paper fibers or whatever, and you just... Okay, pencil lines, some people don't mind if they show up, but a lot of times what I do is I will erase them part way, try to get a lot of the graphite off, because once you put the water down, they tend to stick and they're harder to erase after that. Okay, we're talking about granulation. Okay, exercise. This is something we're going to maybe try to do here a little bit. And that is, talking about white and so forth, like if you have a sky effect, or a sky, you can take a Kleenex and dab out white areas to create nice cloud effects. That's something you might try. And I'm talking here about a tree. Take, for instance, you can start with just doing like maybe a light brown or even yellow on the tree, and then start dabbing. You can take your brush and start dabbing paint in. You want to start with the lighter areas, probably a yellow, and then building it up. This is another tree thing. I find that's interesting that, by darkening part of it, you get a little bit of a feeling of roundness. One thing that's really good about, or one thing that's really helpful to remember, is when you're trying to do something like a tree, to leave some white areas, break it up, let the sky shine through, it's going to look more realistic. Now, okay, there's no substitute for practice. How long does this first workshop last? I don't even know.
Yes,
10:15. Oh, it gets longer at 10:15. Hold on, I talk way too long.
20 minutes.
Okay, this is what we've got. We've got we've got this class, and then we have a break in between, then we have the next one. And probably some of you are going to work right through the break, but you're welcome to take a break, but we're going to kind of just bleed this thing together, okay? What I want you to do right now, for starters, is just to get a feel for painting. So what I want you to do in this first block, let me just say this, okay? I'm basically going to just let you all do your own thing, at least for a little bit here, rather than me somehow demonstrate, okay? But you can do whatever you want to with these four blocks. But I'd like you to do at least in one of them a wash, okay? Whether you make it all wet first and then go down across, or if you want to do a graded wash or whatever, I don't care. But I want you to do some washes, and I'd like for you to, at some point along the way, do a little playing wet on wet, where you're just playing, making stuff wet, dropping some colors in. And then if you have time and you want to do something like a tree, where you're just kind of, again, sort of messing around, we're going to be doing these trees later, and so if you want to experiment with the pine, see how that goes. I'm just going to kind of let you do what you want to do. Another thing I would kind of encourage you maybe to try is to try to dab out some clouds with Kleenex. You're going to be using, what I would suggest for some of your practice stuff is at least for some of your washes, and maybe this first one here at the top, the ultramarine, gives you a nice blue, so is that going to work for you? Can you just dig in and play? And then we'll go from there. The top one is the ultramarine. It's more of the reddish blue, whereas the phthalo blue is more.
What did he say it was?
This first one, go ahead and pay the $10. What you get to keep for your $10 is the two brushes and the little palette, and of course the paper, the little easel thingy, not really an easel, but a little illustration board or whatever. And also, if you are going to leave and you want the good paper that you're going to use in the next class, ask me, I'll give you a sheet of it. Okay? You're getting, your supplies are definitely more than $10. So, anyway.
Did you feel like I promise.
Okay, I'm worried, okay? And that is that we're not going to have time to paint our picture, you know. So, you feel like you got a little bit of a feel now for what you... What I was going to do was to have you untape your paintings, and but I think what we're going to do, if you don't mind, is that we're just going to tape your good paper to the back. I think that'll save time, and it will. You might mess up your painting on what you're doing now, but I don't know that that will matter. So. Tell you what, if I have a helper, we're gonna pass out the paper, the other paper a while, and you can keep playing around with what you're doing while I talk a little bit. Abby's gonna give you a piece of paper. Now, it's not critical which side you put up. One side is slightly rougher than the other, and you probably want to put that out, but it'll work either way. This is Arches cold press, 140 pounds, and what you may want to do before you can just let what you're doing dry. At some point here, I want you to get started sketching your picture on. I think we're going to run out of time if we're not careful. So, on your handout, you can see that I did a little bit of a sketch for you over here. Now, this is a painting that you can paint the way you want to paint, okay? It does not have to look like this. And so, if you want to figure out a way to make this different, help yourself. In fact, you don't have to paint, you don't have to draw anything, except that I'm saying I think you ought to draw a water line and mountains. And I have a dark on there. That's not because I want you to make it dark. It's because I want, those are the ones that are maybe somewhat important to give you a guide. And you don't have to draw anything if you just want to start out without anything. That's fine. But I thought it might be helpful for you to have a bit of a guide. Now I want to show you a little bit here as well. Okay, so there's our color we're going to use. And specifically, this is one thing. This log, that is totally optional. I think you might get along better if you leave that out and just show the water. We messed around with this a little bit, and so here's some children's work with a little help. And so you can see that there's more than one way to paint these. And, you know, slightly crude, but not too bad. Now this is... maybe slightly crude too, but this is what I tried. And then later, my daughter and I were doing this kind of together. And I did this one. No. Oh, I did that one, yeah. Going the wrong way. I did this one. I thought it was pretty good. But then when I saw hers, it's like, wow. I mean, it's different, but she got more. See how my mountains are too much all the same value? And direction. Hers, and this doesn't show up real well, but hers, she got more of that feeling of depth because of the mountains. And anyway, so, oh, then this one I did later, okay? And here I got kind of carried away on this big old dark cloud up here.
But here you see I didn't put in my log, and I think it actually worked a little better. Between this one, I had a little more definition here in this bush, whereas on this one, I let the colors bleed more. And so that's up to you. This is a place where you could use some wet-on-wet techniques if you want to. You could just kind of drop stuff in. I think I'm going to go through this in steps to try to help you a little, but you're welcome to go ahead of me. And let me just say this. Maybe while we're here, what we're going to kind of do is this. We're going to start with the sky. After you have drawn these things in, we'll start with the sky. We're going to make this area wet, okay? And then we're going to paint over this in color down to here, more or less. But you don't have to be, you know, if this bleeds down a little bit, it's not real critical. We're going to do the kind of a wash here, sort of a, it doesn't really necessarily have to be a gray wash. It could be, it doesn't matter. Then we're going to try to lift out some lights, maybe somewhat like the picture is there, like a bit where the sun is, try to lift out a few whites. And then while this is wet, we might mess around with some clouds, or we might not. Then we're going to do the mountains, okay? We could do this wet on wet. We could make these mountains wet and then try to put color. But I'm afraid if we're not careful, we're going to have a problem. So it might be better if we just leave this area dry, paint those in. So once we get the mountains, it's kind of up to, I'm not sure what we'll do then. We'll maybe do the bush. I think maybe we'll do the bush. And at some point, we'll do the pines and the water and the rocks and stuff. Now, a couple of things I want to say. I think you could do this whole painting with your flat brush, okay? But you don't have to. But in a general way, that little brush, I'm not sure how much good it's going to do you. And what I really like for you to think about and try to do is to, when you're done, that when we're done with the classes, that basically you have a painting, okay? Some of us by nature, we tend to get hung up on the details, okay? So, well, let's do it, okay? And dig in there with your 3/4-inch brush and paint the thing. And then, so that when you're done, when you're ready to leave, you have some. I will say this too. I have a number of hair dryers over here. If depending on how you paint, you may not need it at all. But if you're impatient and something just seems too wet and you want it to go on, for instance, let's suppose that you paint this distant mountain and this is all wet in here and you're trying to draw this one and you're afraid it's going to bleed together, you want to just get up, go over there and blow it off. Upshot. That's going to be up to you. And so, but you know, you could say, well, this is dry, or while this is wet, while it's dry, I'm going to do something else. Another thing I want to say is, try not to outline. In other words, a temptation for, and this, these rocks and stuff aren't great, but a temptation would be to come around these rocks and go, yoink, yoink, I'm going to make them stand out. Yeah, you can, but try to make the values define the shapes. In other words, or like the log, try to make so that the darks define it rather than just drawing around it. You understand what I'm trying to say? Okay. So and you'll have a nicer picture that way. Okay. So what I would say is, you can either go ahead and take your picture to your back and then start drawing, or if your paint is wet and you want to just draw your picture first and then later take it to the back. That's the next thing, is to get ready to paint.